when the whole concept of literacy started entering the cosmos and certainly the human experience, it was often said, Natasha, that it was going to replace orality. That actually orality, people would actually sort of forget how to speak to each other. We'd forget memory. Memory would actually be terrible. And indeed, I think Socrates and Plato said they didn't want anything written down at all about their work. Thankfully, antiquarian books and a variety of other things have actually sort of proven several thousand years later that is not the case, and we're now delighted to speak to you.
Sorry, Raymond Rawley, yes, hi.
Sorry, yeah. Raymond, I just thought we'd take it into a different sort of line from that. We've just come out of the cosmos with one of our science fiction authors there.
Right.
So my mindset's still up there. So talk to us about what we've got here.
Well, this is just a selection of books I've been buying over the years and some stock I had from before. Not Sistery, Link's Sistery, there's quite a bit of literature, a few first editions, some weird and wonderful stuff.
Particularly interested in the Secret Dreams that we've actually got there, which is a wonderful biography of, yes, Michael Redgrave.
That's a really frightening film, with the dummy.
Yes.
Yeah, it freaked me out when I was a child, but I brought it because it's horrible.
Well, it's inverse promotion, so that's very good there, Natasha.
Human curiosity there. Exactly, yeah. You have the most beautiful antique books here. You used to own a shop, you said?
Yeah, called the smallest bookshop in the world on Cartergate, yeah. It was good. It was a very small shop, but it was a jeweller's, so it had 8 windows for displaying rings, so you could cram in every sort of book you wanted, big, small, large, whatever. But yeah, I mean, this is... I think it's just a good venue to come. And the bacon sandwich is directly across the road, so that's... And I've got nicotine and caffeine, that's all I'm bothered about.
I was going to say, or alternative vegetarian equivalents, but, you know, yeah. it's there. Something for everybody.
You have the most... In the middle of your beautifully displayed books, you have the most beautiful large volume, and it's clearly leather-bound. Can you tell us a little bit about that one?
Yeah, sure, if I can get to it. Longfellow's Poetical Works. This is...
It's a serious book.
Why by weight rather than... Sorry, I've got to get to it first. Yeah, all illustrated right. There's a pre-Raphaelite guy, W.J. Linton, done some of the illustrations. It's a book you want to have. You've got to want to have it.
Right.
Because you've got to carry it home.
Yes. Is that gilding on the outside
gilding,
of it?
All edges gilt, they call that. And this is what they call a stamped leather binding, blind stamp binding. But these were quite common when they came out because Wordsworth, Longfellow, Tennyson were so popular in the Victorian period. People, I don't think they feel they had to have them in the house, but this was the sort of thing you were seen to be buying, whereas now...
You don't really get the same quality for the stand-up street poets, do we, really?
Well, John Hegley, John Cooper Clarke. I think John Cooper Clarke should be Poet Laureate, personally.
Okay, we'll go with that. I mean, I was thinking of Carol Ann Duffy, actually, over the years.
John Cooper Clarke, definitely. John Betjeman, John Wilmot, the Earl of Rochester, John Cooper Clarke, and there's another one.
We'll find Johnny Depp.
Is he a poet? No.
He needs the money these days, so every cent should be great.
Yeah. They're 4 million off him for tax.
A mere snip in the wonderful world of Hollywood. How can people get in touch with your good self if they're listening to this little piece and think, that sounds interesting?
I'm standing tomorrow, and then I think I might start doing a book fair at Buxton. And there are a few around here. There's one at Farndon. That's on twice a year. And actually tomorrow, this is not publicity for myself, but tomorrow at the Saracen's Head in Southall, the PBFA are holding a proper antiquarian book fair. So there'll be a lot of dealers there. So
there's a special name, isn't there, for books that are kind of pre-1600?
Incunabula. I think it translates into swaddling clothes, but I'm not sure if that's the correct translation. Yeah, I've got some incunabula at home, 1480, I think I've got a piece from the book, The Golden Legend. And I like the evolution of things. I've got a page from a book of ours, that's 1450. Then I've got this printed page from the Golden Legend, that's 1480, printed in Utrecht. Then I've actually got a printed page that's made to look like a medieval manuscript. I quite like the way it evolves. Now it's just paperbacks.
It is interesting, but when you bear in mind that Gutenberg, when he started the whole thing off in the 15th century, the 1400s, little did he know, of course, that this was where we'd actually head to. What was it that drew you into the world of antique books?
My father left me a library, and I started selling that. And then I just... And if you're either into books or you're not. I mean, people say to me, I haven't got a book in the house. I couldn't foresee...
I'm deprived.
Well, possibly. No, not necessarily.
I could
imagine living without books all around me.
Actually, you're nodding there?
Yes, definitely. Oh, yeah. My books are my babies. I can't sell them. Once I've bought them, they're mine. They're mine.
it's the worst kind of addiction, I'm afraid.
No. Yeah. Yes. I mean, it's literature.
I'm addicted to caffeine and nicotine, but this is worse. I've actually gone without food for a couple of days when I bought a book because I had to have it. And that's an illness, really. I wish all my customers were like that, but they're not.
Well, clearly we're getting a whole range of views from this particular perspective, but hats off to you, sir. I think you've done some fantastic job here and have a splendid festival.
Thank you very much. It's very kind of you.
When the mess of yellow paint had been cleaned up, Mum took Betty B to the bathroom to wash her.
She stood Betty B in the bath and sprayed her all over with the shower hose. The bath water turned yellow as all the paint washed off Betty B.
Genius, I'm moved beyond words. I'm seeing a whole series here of Betty B seen, Betty B listening, Betty B patient, Betty B kind, Betty B healthy, Betty B sorry, Betty B tidy, and Betty B safe. And we have the amazing Linda Marston, who presumably is the legend behind Betty B. And I'll come around this side at the Betty B stall here. Is it you, Linda?
Yes, it is. Yes, I was a nursery teacher, so I know what children like. So all the books are based on the same format.
Betty B.
Yes, she gets into trouble. And then she sits on her blanket, which is like this blanket here, to think about
the actual blanket that Betty B sits on.
Did you make that yourself?
Yes, I did.
Oh, wow.
Yes. So she thinks about what she's done, and then she tries to be good afterwards.
Well, it's just as well our colleagues from Disney aren't here, because they'd be signing up the rights straight away, is all I can say. But Natasha?
Why was it particularly a bumblebee? Is that just your personal preference, or is that, do you think children can associate with a bumblebee more? Or
yes, I wrote a book many, many years ago about a little bee, which I've now written again. It's called Benji Bee. So
I see that genders are represented equally here.
But we were going, when I started 5 years ago, we just thought of calling it like Be Kind or Be Sorry. But as a child, I had a doll called Betty. So I thought, oh, we'll call her Betty Bee. And then, of course, when you say it, you realise it's a play on words. So you better be kind, you better be sorry. So we've registered the name so nobody else can use it.
Any issues with wasps out there? So I think, as again, the bees are getting the good publicity,
no.
And as wasps, we're not in there. I mean, have you got a sequel where Betty Bee meets a wasp?
No, we do get some bees come along because they see the little friends there hanging up. So.
And we've clearly spoken at length on our countryside coverage about clearly bees, beekeeping and so on. Are you a beekeeper yourself?
No, we're not beekeepers, but we do plant flowers to attract bees. And on our website, there's a page to tell people what sort of plants to grow in their garden to attract bees, because we know how important they are to us. Yes.
We would not be here today, Natasha, were it not for the bee and its pollination philosophy.
No, I think we can do all we can to try and protect the bee. I think it's really sad what's happening there, and it's great that it can get some publicity in any way, shape or form.
Yes.
Even the doctor was concerned about the bees in his 10th Doctor incarnation from David Tennant's point of view. He's worried about the bees there. Let's move on to the website you're talking about there. How can people get in touch with your good self at Virtue Learning Books?
It's www.betterbeebooks.co.uk. That's the website.
And this is the first Newark Book Festival. What are your thoughts and hopes for this weekend?
Well, we hope that lots of people will come. It's a good venue for lots of people to come round, isn't there? So it's the first time we've had a table this big, though, so
I think you've decorated extremely well. I think there are lots of wonderful bee stuff there. Natasha, any closing thoughts?
No, I think the children are going to be drawn to that. You've got some lovely little crocheted bees. Are they knitted crocheted bees? You've got a bee mobile. You've got little bees on sticks. You've got bee pencils. I mean, it's child paradise, really.
Yes, we do. Well, we've been doing it for 5 or 6 years now, so we know that books alone are a bit boring, so you need something to attract people, and children love we call this the bee pole. The children love those bees.
You're probably too young to remember Arthur Askey, but perhaps the bee, 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 beezy bee song, Be What You Like But Don't Sting We, is the only thing that this needs, really.
I don't remember the song.
You don't remember the bee, 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 honey bee, honey bee, do what you like but don't sting me.
Oh, yes, I think I do remember it, yes.
So, you know,
yes.
I don't normally do a serenade for random souls without sort of channeling one's inner Arthur Askey there. But yes, well worth, could be playing in the background just to sort of attract the bees and the bee fans even further. Pleasure meeting you. Take care.
Oh, thank you very much. Nice talking to you.
Ooh, Viking shield. That's what drew us to this particular part. Natasha, the interview mantle is yours.
Yes, no, you've got some wonderful things on this stall. Is this in relation to any of your books?
Some of them. I tend to specialise in signed first edition historical fiction books, but today I've got books from across the spectrum. I also do a lot of book reviewing, so I basically stock everything these days and have a bad habit of collecting lots of weapons, which make a nice addition to a stall.
It's a way of actually fighting off the unwashed in many ways, or as I said earlier, people from Mansfield. Sorry. In terms of the overall sequence here, historical fiction, it's a huge and growing genre. The Lincoln Book Festival that's coming up later on in the year, it's clearly featuring on the Gothic and so on, but this particular side of things is very much at the heart of the whole thing, as we actually just thank the B-Man for kindly rescuing Spike and others.
I can't believe we left Spike!
Thank the Lord for that. Sorry, back to the historical question, a little bit of live there. Is it something which you've always been interested in, or is it something, well, I read some Karen Maitland stuff and thought that was it, I was hooked.
I've been doing the book reviewing for 25 years now. I started in fantasy and at some point decided there's a massive crossover with historical fiction.
Game of Thrones, perhaps?
Pre that, to be honest. I picked up a Simon Scarrow book back in 1990, I think, something like that. And I don't think I looked back from that point and just blended it all in together. I published for a guy called Christian Cameron, and he does mad stuff like fights in armour. He wrote one of these books sat in a cafe in a suit of armour just so he could get the feel of the weight of the book constantly while he was writing.
That's it. Method writing, isn't it? It's sort of method acting, that's method writing.
Method writing, yes.
Natasha.
I think I need to try some method writing. I'd love to put on a suit of armour and write a book. Are these weapons, they're all yours then? Do you display them in your home?
I'm not really allowed to. I have to put them away when I get home, so this is kind of fun because I get to put them out and let people mess about with them.
For any health and safety people listening, they are perfectly safe and they are secure at this particular moment in time, because you know, given sort of recent routines, we'd hate to have some soul actually sitting around and say, right, I'm getting that sword now. Just as actually, we'll let you actually get on with it with the purchasing and come back to you in a few moments, because clearly sales are manifesting. Let's talk a little bit more, Natasha, whilst we're waiting, about the newarkbookfestival.org.uk, which of course is where we are. Some of the key things that are actually around here, because we'll only be able to provide a small example of things here, the market stalls, which is what we're doing today really from that point of view. We've got Take Time and Dr. Ryan. We're back now with our historical fiction expert and so on. Do you have a favourite of these texts, or is it a case of you can't ask me that?
No, you can. My favourite is Christian Cameron. It's not just because I actually publish it with Parmenion Books, but it's just because he put so much into it. When you read a fight scene, it's actually realistic because I've seen him fight. So you know when he talks about the turn of a sword or the clash or the hit or anything else, that he's probably felt it and done it.
I'm getting a sense of like a Joe Abercrombie soul. Is it a similar sort of feel, or is Joe Abercrombie a different
Joe sort of Abercrombie era? Would probably be accurate in the fact that Christian also writes as Miles Cameron in fantasy, and right. there's some quite similar grim dark, but also dragons and magic going on, but it has a heavy flavour of the medieval fighting going on at the same time. So yeah,
there tends to be sort of, personally from my own experience, two sort of camps when it comes to writing this sort of medieval kind of Viking Saxon pre kind of Renaissance kind of fiction. There generally tends to be one that's more focused on like the historical detail, one that's sort of more kind of adventure, kind of blood and gore. Do you have one that you sort of waver towards, or?
I'm a swords and sandals kind of guy. Yeah, I like.
I did get a sense of your inner Conan the Barbarian coming across thought you'd actually sort of permeate the interview with things like By Crom and such like.
But I know the sort you mean. You're sort of the Robin Young, Alison Weir, that kind of thing, where it's leading in towards more of the people, the dress and
the
stuff like that.
Political kind of side of it more, but you're more of an action sort of man.
Yeah. No, but this year I did I was one of the judges for the HWA Historical Fiction Award, and a lot of these books were entered for that, and that lent probably, I think it's about 100 odd books involved in the reading and deciding for the award for that, and probably about 75 of those lent more towards the literary side than the swords and sandals. But yeah, I was still fighting the corner for getting the swords and sandals into the shortlist.
That's brilliant. And in recent years, obviously, Bernard Cornwell, hugely successful. His Last Kingdom is now obviously a massive hit. Do you find that there's more of this sort of sort of Saxon kind of pre-Renaissance genre kind of coming out more? People are sort of fighting for that more on the shelves?
I think people are seeing it more, and I also think it's bleeding down into the kids. That's probably a good word for the historical fiction, bleeding down into, yeah, into kids, young adult fiction as well. If you look in the bricks and mortar shops like Smith's and Waterstones, you start to see that there's a lot of writers are actually writing down I'm a Saxon, I'm a Viking, that sort of stuff. Those sort of books are coming out for the kids now, so which is good because, I think from my era downwards, the history lent away from that kind of teaching, and now kids are starting to see that past again, and I think they need to.
No, I agree. It's immensely positive, and maybe they're getting more into it than they would, for example, learning the facts and figures off a classroom textbook. So it's great engaging them in that way.
Yeah, I mean, I remember going to trips out, castles and stuff, and it was on this date, this happened, that date, that happened. But you go to places like our own Newark Museum, Civil War Museum, and it's not. It's interactive. You get involved in it now, and I think the books help them do that now. Being in the history gets them more involved in the reading, the understanding of it, and seeing where they came from.
No, I'd certainly agree with that. I think that's a very good point.
Given that we've actually transcended sheet music through ancient books, ancient texts, through children's books, this really gives me a flavour that the Newark Book Festival is going to be here to stay. I mean, there's a real sense of energy here, and the diversification that we've seen just in our little audio promenade is great news from that point of view. From your perspective as an exhibitor, is there a good buzz here?
Yes, definitely. I mean, I did it last year. The gentleman
Books in the Castle.
Yeah, it rained on us all weekend, but we stuck it out, and we had a good time. And yeah, I was really happy to come back and do it again this year. But I think the biggest buzz I got last year doing it was having the weapons and the shields on the stall and the amount of adults that came with the kids and picking them up, playing with them. It became not about selling books or anything. It just became about them coming and having a bit of fun.
It is actually a rider in the Natasha Armstrong contract when she does location reports that if there's a sword available, she does need to have a photograph taken posing with it. So I presume it's going to be okay.
Perfectly fine by me.
So win-win. And how can people get in touch with your good self on the web to find out more about the work of Christian Cameron and indeed lots of other things that we were involved with?
If you look up anything to do with Parmenion Books, you'll find my blog site, which is Parmenion Books WordPress site, or parmenionbooks.com is where I sell lots and lots of signed hardback copies of books. If you look up Christian Cameron, you'll find him. He has his own website and Hippias site, where there's a forum, and he's on there all the time, so you can chat with him directly.
Sounds like we should actually feature him as one of our Book of the Month features and actually sort of join us from that.
I can give you a copy to take away and read if you like, and you can definitely have a review.
Let's go with that. We will do a review copy for the moment. Many thanks indeed.
No problem. Thank you.
We haven't quite finished this awesome interview that we're doing, and already I think as we have a review copy, we guarantee Christian Cameron will be talked about and will be focused on in upcoming Books of the Month as far as Southside's concerned. Natasha, you just found a wonderful piece of information out about our interviewee here.
Yes, he collects all sorts of different weapons, and he's also an archer. He is Robin of the Sherwood Archers, which I think is fabulous.
And leaves me wide open for more abuse than I've had down the years for being called Robin.
I did get a sense of a kind of Jason Connery-esque Robin of Sherwood line here. Not quite Michael Praed, and maybe not Errol Flynn, but definitely Jason Connery. Daniel Craig, Jason Connery.
I can see that, definitely.
I'll take that, thank you. That's a compliment, I'll take it.
So where can people see you, actually, in performance, as the archery world is concerned?
Sherwood Archers is over in Southwell. The club shoots there all the time. But there's competitions all round Nottinghamshire. To be honest, since I've moved up here about 20 years ago and got into the archery, the diversity of clubs is amazing. And it's a fantastic sport for kids to get into. They can start from 7 years old.
Well, the last midweek drivettes to actually take up archery, sort of level at a countryside link scenario, was indeed Emma Tinson, who's currently based in Surrey. So I don't know, Natasha, when you return from your overseas jaunts, would you be in for an archery session?
Oh, I love archery. I love, I think I'm more of a short bow than a long bow kind of girl. I prefer the accuracy, but I'd love to take it up properly.
Yes, if you shoot long bow, you have to have a sense of humour about missing a lot.
So would there be a possibility of connecting with you guys and actually doing some archery on location reports?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, more than happy.
Of course, I'd have to put the rider that I don't stand with an apple on my head somewhere around the whole base, because that's William Tell. He's Swiss. It's a different line entirely.
Yeah, there's a nice video online where somebody does that with a rubber dummy and most of the arrows go in the head. So, yeah no.
A couple of years back, Inspired On Air did a feature, as recommended by Sarah Bullimore, on the organiser of the fabulous Books in the Castle event. And keeping the legacy going, here we are with that very same person. First time we've actually met in person, the legend who is...
Paul Trickett.
Paul, good to speak with you, good self. Genuine delight. You must feel very proud that actually this is continuing to grow and continue to develop, and as I say, now the baton's been kind of passed on to Sarah, that the legacy is maintained.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm very proud. This is the third year now. And every year it's growing, which is fantastic.
I remember the first interviews we did, and you thought, I think it was just about 2 or 3 weeks beforehand, and we were pushing it. We weren't quite sure how it was going to work. We thought, well, the venue's great. If you build it, it will come, etc. But here it is, manifest.
Yeah, absolutely. The first year was in the castle. This year we moved into Newark Marketplace, although we're still using the castle. So, and also we've got other venues around the town. Every year just seems to be getting bigger, which is great.
Now, obviously aware of the fact that one of the key participants, actually, in the New York Book Festival was indeed Anne Frank's stepsister, and that was a heart-rending tale, Eva Schloss, who was there. You've also got, of course, books and artwork signed by New York's very own Dan Buster, George Johnny Johnson. Lots of recent historical fiction here. Is this a particular favourite from yourself?
Yes, it is. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Signed books, signed and collectible books are really sought after these days, so it's a really good market to be in, yeah.
I've noticed you've got a book about King John as well, which I thought was quite apt, being obviously based in Lincoln Magna with the Magna Carta, but also being in Newark, because, correct me if I'm wrong, King John died at Newark Castle,
yes, he
didn't
did. He? Yeah, 800 years ago, yeah. Yes. Yep. Yeah, so really, it's just a celebration of that, really, yeah.
So... is there a particular... I mean, we've got Mavis Curtis, of course, the Women's Institute Centenary History. We were actually doing a piece with the WI at the Great Yorkshire Show just a matter of days ago. Is there a favourite angle that you prefer? Is it the sort of World War II material, or is it the more medieval stuff? Where do you sort of put yourself?
I'm three big things, to be honest with you. Crime goes very well around here, for some reason. History is very...
Comment on the population, don't worry. That would be Mansfield. Oh, no, that's third time. I won't say it. And there we go.
Yeah, so crime's popular, murder's popular. History is popular, and because we like aviation, Newark Air Museum and things, there's a massive aviation sort of fan base around here. So yeah, so I've gone for that market as well. Yeah.
Do you find that one sort of sells more? Do you see one that's emerging more in the market at the moment, or is it all just generally doing healthy?
Do you know what? Overall, it's a nice steady mix. Yeah. There's no one particular thing that's done more better than anything else. Yeah. Although talking from today, aviation's gone really well today so far.
But with the RAF Scampton show coming up later on in the year, and I know Ben Lewis would be devastated that he's actually somewhere in the East Midlands today, but he couldn't actually join us for this particular event. He's a keen aviator soul, as I found out at the Lincolnshire show. But it is something where we're kind of, you know, there is that resonance, I suppose.
Yes, I certainly think so. I mean, look at Lincolnshire alone. We've got so many air bases, and of course, you mentioned the Newark Air Base. It's a massive part of our history, and I think it's lovely that people want to celebrate that, and they want to feel like they're connecting almost to their own history and their own family. And it's lovely that it's doing so well, and it's here, and it's being represented.
Yeah, absolutely. What's been quite nice is that for quite a few years, a lot of the veterans sort of kept the stories to themselves, but maybe in the last sort of 10, 15 years, they've started, maybe because they're starting to pass. They want these stories to be heard and to pass down. So they're very active now. You know, sometimes they turn up to talks, and there's anywhere from 50 to 300 people coming to meet them, and that's fantastic. You know?
And so many of these guys who are responsible for maintaining democracy in a big chunk of the Western world, they weren't dealing with post-traumatic stress disorder. Well, I say they had to deal with post-traumatic stress disorder, but it wasn't called PTSD. It was called shell shock or something along those sort of lines. So one can understand not wishing to revisit the memories and so on.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like the Far East prisoners of war, I mean, they went through absolute hell. And, you know, lately, again, they're starting to talk about it and come to things. And, yeah, you know, that's good for them, because they've had so many bad years where they probably had a family and they built a career, but that was all bottled up inside, and now maybe they're starting to feel like they can talk about stuff.
Storytelling. We are creatures who like our narratives, and storytellers are very much at the heart of the whole thing, and you couldn't get to a finer place than the Newark Book Festival to actually engage in storytelling. Will you join us in the studio in Lincoln before too long? Will you cross that boundary and actually sort of come and join us and keep us appraised of this? Or is it a case of, no, I'm already planning for 2018. No, it's okay. I can relax because the mantle has been passed on.
No, I've always got something on, but I'm always ready, willing and able to join you guys. No problem at all.
No, I'm sure we'd love to have you. I'm not sure if I'd be witness to that, but I might
there
be on.
There is Skype these days.
There is Skype,
no
that
reason
is
why
true.
You aren't there. Just because you're not in the country doesn't mean you're not in the showroom, Natasha. Good
that
grief.
Is true. That is true.
Clearly, a literary festival, a book festival, without a poet, inconceivable. And as you just were asking this fine gentleman who's wearing a white coat, so clearly he's all set and ready to actually go through, he's got his stethoscope to hand. Who could this person be? It is...
Dr. Rhyme.
Dr. Rhyme.
It's had to be.
Dum, da, dum, dum, dum. We're meeting Dr. Rhyme.
I can't believe it. You need your own Bond film.
I do, don't I? But not yet. Let me finish the poem first.
So, Doctor, what are we going to hear today?
I thought I'd read one of mine. I was going to read one of Shakespeare's, but as Spike Milligan said, he never read any of mine. So, anyway. I'll read the one... I'll do two...
We have okay. more than enough time for two, Natasha.
I think we can do two. I think that'd be a treat.
Okay, we'll do the family kaleidoscope. Here comes Mr. Kaleidoscope walking along the cliff. Somebody shoots him down and he falls into the fish. Here comes Mrs. Kaleidoscope licking her ice cream. Somebody steals her handbag where she keeps her dreams. Here comes Jimmy Kaleidoscope waiting for the bus. Somebody nicks his bus fare. He never comes back to us. Here comes the family kaleidoscope. Zombies, 1, 2, 3. Watch out for your dinner. They'll eat it, then eat me.
Round of applause, I think.
Yep.
That's very good. Yep. Definite round of applause. Yes. I think we need another one.
We need another one.
Okay, there we go. It's based on a true story. And it's called On Being Sold Hoops Instead of Alphabetti Spaghetti.
Could be critical.
I know.
Here we go.
Ooh. 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 Oh. Ooh. Oh. Ooh. Oh.
Genius. Absolutely. Another round of applause, please. With the photographer in the background there. We can grab our photographers. We have the press and paparazzi here. Good seeing you as ever.
Yes, good to see you too, Alex. How are you?
I'm fine. So how's it panning out, Chris? How's the festival? Because we're lots of Dr. Rhyme here. Are you a real doctor? People come with complaints about things, you know, arthritis.
People complain to me about all kinds of things. Bus fares, crinkly sweet wrappers.
Yeah, so Dr. Rhyme can be contacted.
I can deal with complaints, but I usually show them the door. It's a very interesting door.
Chris, how has the photography been going as the official photographer of the event?
Yeah, it's going well. The light's not too bad. The rain's held off, which is always the main thing.
It's because we're here, you know. We always see this sort of thing.
Yeah, it's good that you bring the sunshine with you. We'll have to get you to come again tomorrow.
Well, we've just actually experienced a fantastic talk here at the New York Book Festival, which combined Byron with D.H. Lawrence. You might have thought it couldn't happen, but it has. And we're delighted now to be able to speak to Byron specialist
Paul Wickman.
Paul, share with us why Byron in particular as something that captured your own imagination.
Well, I think simply he's a great writer, but I think Byron has this great way of communicating at different levels. He's, first of all, I think if you read some of his great poems such as Don Juan, you'll see that it's actually quite funny, but also very profound as well. And I think that's what's so attractive about him for me. From the sublime to the ridiculous is a way to describe him. Yes, and he's also the archetypical romantic poet, mad, bad, dangerous to know. But also rejected that. He sort of, the idea of him being called a romantic poet would have been something that he would have really hated. And I think that's why he's so fascinating.
Well, looking ahead, of course, to our upcoming Lincoln Book Festival, which has got the accent on Gothic, clearly the connection between Byron, Shelley, the links are actually there. Is that something, I mean, obviously there wasn't time in the session today to actually talk about that famous summer, but again, that's something where I think most people, when they think about Byron, think, oh, was he also part of that holy trinity with Percy Bysshe Shelley, of course, and Mary that effectively came up with those Tales to Horrify.
Oh, indeed. Well, that was the sort of the so-called year without a summer, which was 1816.
The volcano explosion.
And yes, of course, caused by the year without a summer, because the volcano created basically meant there was no summer because of the climate and everything. The year without a summer not only gave us the genesis of Frankenstein, but also the experiences of that summer led to Percy Shelley's poems Mont Blanc and Hymns to Intellectual Beauty, but also Byron's himself was very inspired by his experiences and wrote his really great dramatic poem called Manfred. And also someone else alongside them was Byron's physician, John Polidori, sort of created this story called The Vampire, and, which is often modelled on Byron.
So indeed. Before Bram Stoker.
Before Bram Stoker, indeed. In fact, a lot of these early vampire stories we get in the 19th century, some these sort of the idea of an aristocratic vampire is actually based on Byron himself, often, this idea of, this sort of blood-sucking aristocrat.
As a kind of Don Juan. Now, you say Don Juan, I say Don Juan. Is there a rationale for that?
Well, in the period when Byron was writing, of course, we would say Don Juan now. When Byron's writing, they tended to anglicise the Juan. So in the opening few stanzas of Don Juan, he rhymes Juan with new one. Several times, so that's how we know it's pronounced like that in that sense. So.
Just an important thing, I heard sort of mutterings. I said, we just have to play about Natasha.
Yeah, it was interesting there listening to you, because obviously you were trying to place Byron within a Nottinghamshire context. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we're at Newark Book Fair today. You looked like as if you were certainly struggling with that. And is there a certain location that you could specifically place him at, or is it more of a, as you said, it's more of an all over the place kind of he's a man
European.
Of the world, a European man of the world sort of thing?
I would say he's cosmopolitan, yes. Something that we tried to address, that so many of his tales, I mean, he had Turkish tales that were set, you know, obviously set in Turkey and the sort of what we might now consider the Middle East.
The Greek scenario was very much there.
Obviously, sort of towards the end of his life, fighting in the sort of Greek war, and it very much inspired by Italy and Greece, like the second generation romantics were, along with Shelley and things like that. So yeah, cosmopolitan. It's interesting when we're mentioning Don Juan, which is interesting in that regard, because you have a Spanish, you know, famous archetypical character with an anglicised name, with a verse form which is called Ottava Rima, which is an Italian verse form which sort of Byron popularised into English. So he did that quite a bit.
In many ways, I'd always seen Byron, a sort of closing point here, as a sort of Ziggy Stardust, David Bowie person of his day, really. How would you say that's viable?
Well, I think the idea of manipulating the persona is certainly something that Byron shares with Bowie, and in fact, I believe, I may be wrong on this, but Bowie was probably read quite a bit of Byron, was quite influenced by him, so I think that's something they would definitely share.
Let's not get into Bowie Bowie, otherwise yes. That's a whole new line.
Yes.
Many thanks indeed, been an absolute delight, and thank you for being part of the festival.
No problem, thank you very much.
If people are interested in finding out more work about your sort of studies, any particular website you'd like to point them to? Yes.
Well, I would suggest going to derby.ac.uk and then just searching for myself, Paul Wickman, and see what you find.
Well, having put to rights the whole notion of whether it's Don Juan or Don Juan, that would have worried me. I decided not to actually pursue the notion of Brian Clough being a Nottingham hero, which of course he is, but he was indeed born in Middlesbrough and indeed also managed Derby County as well. But we best not start going down that line either.
No, I think it's best to leave that one well alone.
We have literally just covered probably, I'd say maybe 10%, if that, possibly 6 or 7% of what has been a fabulous festival. What have your highlights been as you're completing the evaluation form, Natasha, of both obviously meeting Dr. Rhyme, seeing some of those fabulous magic market stalls, pop-ups, etc., and of course checking out some of the history side of things, then literary heroes with Dr. Andrew Harrison from the D.H. Lawrence Research Centre here at the Newark Town Hall Council Chambers, and that's just a smidge of the whole thing. What stood out for you today?
I think it was just really interesting talking, especially to some of the stallholders, and just finding out a little bit about them, because I think reading is obviously a thing that connects us all, and people are very deeply passionate in what they love and what they read. And it was just interesting, just the stories behind the different people, what had led them and connected them with literature, and even behind their own writing, some of the authors. I think that's really fascinating, and I really enjoyed meeting them.
Well, you've been listening to Inspired on Location with both the Midreet Drive and indeed, obviously, Southside Broadcasting and Siren FM. If you're looking for the social media, it's at Newark Book Fest, hashtag Newark BF. That's hashtag Newark BF. And of course, the website newarkbookfestival.org.uk. We may get a few final words with respect to Sarah, but Natasha, as ever, it's been a privilege working with your good self. Here's to the next location report.
Yes, certainly.
We started with the Newark Book Festival a wee while ago, and a reminder, newarkbookfestival.org.uk with the social and the hashtags at Newark Book Fest and hashtag Newark BF. Could it be hashtag Newark Be Friendly? Because everybody has been friendly, including Sarah Bullimore. And Sarah, your praises have been sung throughout the whole day so far and continue to be so. You must be pleased. We're a quarter of the way through and all's well.
That's good, isn't it, Alex? That's fantastic. And it's great to see so many people here today as well enjoying themselves and sharing that love of books.
I've certainly been very impressed in terms of what we've been looking at. Natasha, we've talked about sort of our particular favourites. Any thoughts post the event, well, post the first day or first morning?
Yeah, no, I've certainly been very impressed, particularly with the different range of different genres available, etc. And I'd love to see it done again. If hopefully this is successful next year. Is that certainly something that you're looking into?
Absolutely. So long as we get really good audiences this year, what we can do then is we'll have a lot longer to plan next year. So this, basically, we had 3 months, and that's not 3 months full-time or part-time, but just when we can fit it in. So having a year to actually look at funding and get more, and we'll be looking for a lot more sponsors and friends as well to help us build it.
Big friendly giants just walk past us, I presume, in some strange routine. It's very weird.
This is what happens at a festival, Alex.
Where do we go on to from this as far as Inspired on Air is concerned? What's the next biggie that's being planned?
Oh, well, we'll have to wait and see, won't we? But I think we'll definitely do a nice follow-up from this. And it'd be great to reconnect with some of the artists and authors as well that have been here this weekend.